Now we have a panel discussion about a range of environmental issues. The panel will be attempting to answer the question, what does the environment do for Northern Ireland and how should we protect it? Apart from Anna Lowe, who will be one of the panellists, all the other organisations will be from outside and will be giving us their perspective. So I'd like to invite the panellists up to join us along with our friend Anna. Anna will be the first person to speak. Anna's not only an MLA, but she's also chair of the Assembly's Environment Committee, and she'll be the first person to speak. So, Anna, do you want to take over from?
Yeah. Good afternoon, everyone. I know this is the graveyard session, but I'm delighted to see there's still so many people with us this afternoon. Delighted, Maura's got a lot of appreciation today. You absolutely deserve it. And I also want to pay tribute to all the retiring councillors as well in Belfast and in other district councils for really holding up the Alliance ethos and values over the years. And thank you very much. Yes. Right. The title for this session is What Does the Environment Do to Us? I would like to say, really, the environment doesn't really do things to us. It's more we do things to the environment, like we damage our environment over the decades and generations. We depend on the natural environment for our health and well-being, for our food, and for the economy. We need quality air to breathe in and clean water to drink. We need a healthy environment to maintain biodiversity and to have a coherent ecosystem to provide us with temperate climate, sustainable agricultural and fishing industries to enhance our physical and mental health through leisure and sport in open green spaces. We have taken our environment for granted for too long. We have neglected the need to protect it and sustain it for future generations. We have been very close to breaching some EU environmental directives and having to pay huge infraction fines, such as the destruction of horse mussels. Kieran's not here. Kieran's always the first one to jump on that issue in Stranford Loch. The destruction of horse mussels in Stranford Loch. Poor freshwater quality standards in our rivers and lakes as well have also been very close to infraction fines. Habitats for birds and species are not in favourable conservation conditions. Again, the DOE is having a watching brief over that as the chair of the Environment Committee. We are getting reports all the time about, you know, our water condition. We should be in good condition according to EU targets at 59% of our rivers and lakes. In Northern Ireland, we are currently still at 28%. So it is not good enough, and we certainly now are going into a second round of the river-based management scheme for another 4 years. Hopefully we would avoid being fined again millions of pounds for, the prospect of being fined millions of pounds for that. We spend every year millions of pounds taking out pollutants from our rivers, soil and our sea. I know NI Water spends millions of pounds per year for electricity, really just to clean out our water so that we can drink clean, fresh water. That's such a waste because we pollute all the waters into the reservoirs, and in order for us to have good enough water, we spend that amount of money. I think something like £40 million in the electricity, and most of it goes into cleaning up our water. Illegal dump, the recent illegal dump in Moboy, some of you may be aware, something like 500,000 tons of illegal waste dumped in an area just outside Derry. And that illegal dump in Moboy will cost over £140 million to clean up, if ever we can clean that up. So how should we protect it? I think, first of all, we need to change hearts and minds up and hill in Stormont. Stormont, certainly, we need Stormont to have stronger commitment, stronger willingness to place protection on the environment on a much higher priority for government. NIEA, that's the Northern Ireland Environment Agency within DOE, has very limited resources, not enough staff, inadequate regulatory systems, and very weak enforcement regime. There is just isn't that commitment, I think, for us to say we really want to protect our environment in Northern Ireland. The new department is now called the Department for Agriculture, Environment and Rural Affairs, and that DOE is going to be merging. And I want to take this opportunity to thank our two ministerial colleagues, Stephen Farry and David Ford, for fighting to get the name, the word environment, into the name of the department. And I'm grateful for their effort, for their argument in the end, in successfully persuading the executive minister, most that is really DUP and Sinn Féin, for including the name of the environment in that. It is so important that, you know, that we recognise environment is as important as agriculture, if not more. And we need to work together, and there needs to be that priority for all those areas. Should we be asking for an independent EPA, Independent Environment Protection Agency, outside of any departments? That's always been in our manifesto, for an independent agency rather to be subsumed in one department. But I don't think we have any hope of getting that in the meantime. We will continue to highlight the importance of it for an independent enforcement agency and independent thinking on protecting the environment. EU directives help, and it is important that I think all our departments work together. For example, again, like the horse muscles in Strangford, it was almost fighting against DOE, and the delay in doing something to help the Strangford Lord seabed to protect the mussels led us to almost facing severe fines. But not only that, we destroy that nursery bed for other species. That is a sin. So directives are very important, but our departments need to be working together. Hopefully with the new department, maybe they see more sense and there's more collaboration between the different elements of statutory duties. Resourcing NIEA is very important. I want now to pay tribute to the voluntary sector. They have done an awful lot in protecting our environment, and I'm very, very disappointed that DOE is going to squeeze the environment sector. They are, I understand, they are going to see over 10% cuts. They're going to be short of £9 million for next year for the budget. But it seems to me to be very unfair that the cuts are nearly all going to fall on the voluntary sector, because the voluntary sector, for a DOE giving them £1, they can lever many more pounds from other sources, from the EU and other charities, and using very dedicated volunteers' time and effort in helping to protect our environment. The Marine Act is something new, and I want to say it was really exciting. We went for the workshop. The committee all went there, and I stayed all day in the final, the third and final workshop in talking with stakeholders about the destination of our MCZs, the Marine Conservation Zones. So in Northern Ireland, we're going to have our first four MCZs, hopefully in 2 years' time, for us to start looking at protecting special species. We do have, I think, the world's nearly 2%. Someone can maybe challenge me. The world's 2% of the rarest species, the world's, are here in Northern Ireland, breeding on our grounds, and we need to protect these very endangered species. So I'm going to let my other colleagues to talk to you about the environment. Thank you.
Next up is Stephen McCabe, and he's a Senior Policy Officer with Northern Ireland Environment League, and he's going to join us on the platform.
Good afternoon. Thanks for the invitation to come along and speak to you. I'll just say something about where I'm from. Northern Ireland Environment Link is the forum and networking body for non-statutory organisations concerned with the environment in Northern Ireland. Members are involved in environmental issues of all types, at all levels, from local communities up to the global environment. Environment Link brings together a wide range of knowledge, expertise, experience, which can be used to help develop policy, practice and implementation across a wide range of environmental fields. So what does the environment do for Northern Ireland? The environment is the envelope in which everything sits. As such, what the environment does is inestimable. But we can begin to look at the services and the goods, the public goods, that flow from the environment to society, and begin to value those things and take those values into account when we make decisions about how land and sea are used. Human beings tend to be selfish, and sometimes I think that we won't value the environment unless we value what it does for us. And it does so much for us. We would say that, as Anna has already highlighted, the environment is key to your health. Air quality has a direct impact on your health every day. There are very clear links between natural space and between urban green space and health and well-being, both physical health and mental health. The current health minister has said, we know that people with poorer health often live where there is dereliction, lack of green space, and limited access to environments for walking and cycling, or for children to play in. And he's right. The environment is crucial for your food supply. In Northern Ireland, there are something like 800,000 hectares of crops, 16 million poultry, 2 million cattle, 2 million sheep, all reliant on a healthy environment to supply our food chain. The environment is essential for your water supply. 600 million litres of water a day are delivered to almost 800,000 homes. from 34 natural sources, including upland reservoirs, rivers and lochs. But less than 30% of our water bodies meet EU requirements for raw water quality. If we could protect, as Anna has already pointed out, if we could protect that raw water quality and bring it up to standard, how much money would it save us in wastewater treatment, in drinking water treatment? We can look at water in terms of flooding as well. 46,000 homes in Northern Ireland are vulnerable to flooding. And that could increase with climate change. And that can be alleviated through good environmental, good land use management, allowing some areas to flood so that areas that we don't want to flood don't. The environment, as I've inferred already, is vital to the economy. 45,000 to 50,000 people in Northern Ireland are employed in agriculture based in the environment. 32,000 are involved in environmental regulation, management, tourism, recreation, with a gross value added to the Northern Ireland economy of in excess of 573 million per annum. The tourism economy alone is worth more than 500 million per annum, with room for growth, and we need to be ambitious about that growth and protecting the environment on which it's based. The Northern Ireland Marine Protected Area Network has been estimated at £164,000 per square kilometre. We need to protect that. We need to safeguard that. That's our natural capital. The market share of visitors to attractions in Northern Ireland for environment and heritage sites is over 50%. Our environment is why people come to Northern Ireland. And I'm not even touching on the renewables industry and the great potential there is in Northern Ireland for exploiting in a positive way that natural resource. The environment is key to the success of society. Beautiful places instill a sense of civic pride. Civic pride's important. A huge proportion of our population is in education, and environmental education enhances student performance across the whole curriculum. Research has shown that. And research has also shown that healthy environments lead to greater community cohesion. So the environment can be central to government delivering on its strategy for building a united community. The environment is your heritage and also your legacy. It provides a sense of place. It makes Northern Ireland unique. It's for our children. The environment is for everyone equally. And it's quite unique in that. And that's really why we need to protect it. And how we protect it is by using land in the best way possible. We can explore it maybe a little bit more in discussion, but we would advocate the development of a land strategy for Northern Ireland that would help us to optimise the way in which we use the finite resource that is our land. That's pretty much all I'm going to say in opening.
And our last speaker is Joanne Sherwood, and she's the director of RSPB Northern Ireland.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you very much for the invite here today. I'm going to start telling you a little bit about RSPB Northern Ireland. So we're an environmental charity, and we've been here for very nearly 50 years. We're part of a UK-wide organisation that looks after lands in the UK, but also the UK overseas territories. And we speak out for birds and for wildlife, inspiring people to do their bit to give nature a home, but also educating people about the value of nature, and particularly young people. We've got 12,500 members here in Northern Ireland, and across the UK have access to 1.1 million members who support the cause of giving nature a home. And through BirdLife International, we link up with organisations across the globe, And that's very important because much of our particularly migratory birds here in the UK winter overseas. We do deal with all nature. We moved to all nature as opposed to just birds about 2 years ago, and that's because we found that much of the habitat that we are interested in is good for other species. And here in Northern Ireland, we're very fortunate to have things like Irish Ladies' Tresses and Penny Royal. We have 10 reserves in Northern Ireland, and if you haven't been to our new Belfast Window and Wildlife, which has recently reopened, I would encourage you to go and visit it down in Harbour Road West. And we also advocates, influence and shape policy, and educate our young people. So I want to tell you about two things. The first is that nature is in trouble. While organisations have been working to protect nature, we're winning individual wars, but we're losing the battle currently. And that's because of some of the things that Anna referred to, because of things like climate change, over-exploitation, habitat and species loss, pollution, and the fact that many people are disconnected from nature. Would you believe it that since 1980, 420 million birds have been lost from Europe? And that means that we are getting towards a tipping point. But there is hope. It would be very easy to be gloomy, but there is hope. Here in Northern Ireland, we've had remarkable success where we've actively intervened. So in East County Down, where we've advised farmers who are in receipt of agri-environment payments to how to tweak their farming practice, we've seen a 79% increase in yellowhammers. We've had similarly excellent results up in Glenwherry and in Loch Ney Basin, where waders, breeding waders, Irish Ladies' Tresses and Penny Royal are increasing as farmers tweak their farming methods, which also means they have more ground to graze their sheep. We've had stories of three generations on the one farm for the first time standing outside their back door and hearing the call of curlew. And particularly for the oldest in that family, he was incredibly emotional because he said, "That's the first time I've been able to share that sound with my grandson." And we've had real policy success in Northern Ireland with the Northern Ireland Marine Act. So why does all this environment stuff matter? Why does it matter to me, and why should it matter to us as a country? Well, I think we've already heard about the food, the fuel, the employment, the tourism, the recreation, the scenery, the wildlife. I'd like to bring it to life with an example. We worked in partnership with Northern Ireland Water up in the Garran Plateau, and in a few simple steps, with the landowners blocking some drains, the bog on the Garran Plateau was re-wetted. We were absolutely delighted for all of the bog species that could come back into that wet area. But more importantly, the bog holds on to carbon, so it helps to tackle climate change. It helps to stop downstream flooding by holding on to the water in high flows. And it has cleaned up water that was going into a Northern Ireland water treatment works. So instead of sediment going into that works, and them having to pay to take it out with all the chemicals and the electricity that that entails, the water going into the works is cleaner. And that is a win for everybody involved. The environment is down the political agenda, beyond doubt, across the UK. It's been pushed down the agenda, particularly in these times of recession. And I think there is a myth that it is the environment or the economy, the environment or jobs, the environment or people's well-being. And actually, what I'd hope to persuade you is that these are not either-ors. These are togethers. It is a myth. It's the environment and the economy. It's the environment and people. And Stephen's already given you some statistics about economic growth. It's worth over 500 million in Northern Ireland, more than 30,000 direct jobs. 20 hectares of green space is worth more than 3 million to the health service through opening up areas for physical activity. That in itself is a compelling reason. But there are dangers in this current climate in Northern Ireland. We've already heard about the merger of departments. The DOE budget has been slashed by more than 11%, which means that much of the funding to environmental charities who deliver statutory objectives has been cut. But that bringing together of the departments also provides an opportunity. It provides us with the opportunity to rethink perhaps how regulation has done. And I think that is a good question about whether there should be an independent environment agency here in Northern Ireland, because the environment needs a strong voice. Anna referred to the Water Framework Directive and the Habitats and Birds Directive. And the Habitats and Birds Directive is under threat at the moment. The European Commission is looking at it. It's looking at a refit process. And we will be gearing up to fight any weakening of the Birds and Habitats Directive, because our evidence shows that where it's been implemented well, it gives certainty for business, but it also protects the most vulnerable species and habitats that we have and on which our ecosystem relies. So we have a shared future here in Northern Ireland, and part of that shared future must include the natural environment, with all the partners, the farmers, the water company, the agricultural colleges, schools, businesses that entails. Nature knows no boundary, and for my money, it holds the key to a more sustainable and prosperous future in Northern Ireland. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and that's a very useful contribution. I think from my perspective around the discussion around an independent environmental protection agency, locally within my constituency, there was an issue of pollution, and without that independent environmental protection agency, we had the NEEA, we were not independent, and we were allowing the pollution to go on a number of occasions because there was a working within the public sector and understanding that that was permissible. I think that's why you need an independent rigour in relation to that. We have a number of questions, and I'll be looking to Sharon Lowry in the audience to see how long we've got for questions. How long? 15 minutes. Okay, fine. So I've got the first two. If you want to ask a question, you need to fill in a card, and then we'll direct us to the panel, and they will answer them. So the first one is from our chair, which is Councillor Neil Kelly, and it's to the RSPB rep, and it's about the general decline in bird life and wildfowl in Lough Neagh. Do you want to expand a wee bit on that?
Yeah. Thanks, Joanne. You did sort of cover this a little in your presentation, but I grew up in Antrim, the shores of Lough Neagh, and I remember many years ago a lot more whitworth swan, grey-legged geese, grebes, various ducks on the loch, and over the recent years there seems to be a great decline in that, and I'm not sure exactly what the reasons are for that. I was just wondering, had any thoughts about perhaps what has caused that and what we can do to try and improve? It's the largest, obviously the largest freshwater lake in these islands, and it's something I think we need to protect and enhance, and I was just wondering about your thoughts or ideas around that.
Yes, thank you. So Lough Neagh is one of the areas we actually focus on in Northern Ireland, along with Fermanagh and then Rathlin Island up in the north coast and the seed-eating birds in County Down. It's part of one of our futurescapes, and we work with other partners around the Lough Neagh Basin because it is an incredibly intensively used basin. Something like 50% of our land in Northern Ireland all drains into Lough Neagh. It's quite tricky with birds that migrate because you have to look at a couple of factors. You know, what's going on, where those birds come from, and then what goes on in the waters around Lough Neagh. So we've been working with the other partners to try to make sure that agriculture around the basin is as sustainable as possible, that some of the food sources that are in the basin are protected, not just for the birds, but for you know, the other species that use Lough Neagh. But it is quite a complicated picture, and we work with our bird life partners overseas for those swans in particular that are on the migratory route.
Okay. The next question is from Pete Lavery, and it's to the whole panel, and it's about how can we reduce our reliance upon oil? Yes. That's wide one. Who wants to take that first? Anna?
Well, you're probably aware that oil and gas are going to run out in 50, 60 years' time. The programme for government has set a target for Northern Ireland of 20% of our electricity should come from renewable energy by 2015. So we're nearly there. But the next target is much more ambitious. The next target is 40% of renewable energy by 2020. At the moment, we really mostly based on that 20% of renewable energy actually mostly comes from wind energy. And what the Environment Committee has just recently produced an inquiry report about wind energy, and we're saying we need to have a more strategic look at it, because in some areas really there's a saturation point now, like in West Tyrone, 60% of wind turbines, whether it's in the pipeline being approved or existing, are all in the Sperrin area, in West Tyrone area, and we need to be thinking of other renewable sources like biomass, like solar panels and other means.
There's some research that talks about the idea of a carbon bubble, that we already have more oil in the big oil companies that's been extracted from the ground than we'll be allowed to burn in light of climate change legislation. And that's quite a frightening thought, because they're still extracting more. So at some point, theoretically, oil may lose its value, and then there'll be all sorts of difficulties. So that's sort of one context setter for this. I would completely agree with Anna around having a very mixed approach to renewables and a strategic approach to how... It comes back to what I was saying about a land strategy for Northern Ireland. Having a strategic approach to what land is best for producing what kind of energy, and using that land in such a way. But it's very much about planning and being strategic.
So, yes, I would agree with Stephen in that it is about, the right development, particularly for renewables, in the right place. So we're supportive of wind energy, for example, where it's located in the right place and doesn't threaten species that are internationally important and designated. And I also think it's about thinking laterally about what things could be used to replace some of the more traditional fuels. So we've been thinking ourselves about, we do a lot of rush cutting. Is there any option, any possibility to use that rush in perhaps biomass? But again, I think all of these things are early days and exploration, but it's about a mixed picture going forward.
Cheers. Thank you very much. Next question is about the privatisation of forests, and it's from Brendan Heading in East Antrim. So there he is there, and the man with the mic will bring it over to you.
Thanks very much, Andrew. A few of us would have been shocked to hear a proposal a week ago from the deputy leader of the SDLP, who suggested forests could actually be privatised in order to fund budget shortfalls in Northern Ireland. Could the panel comment on that rather surprising proposal?
Who wants to take that first? Stephen, do you want to mix it around?
I was actually unaware of that, but I will certainly be looking into it. As I said, anything like that is bound to be detrimental, and privatising the environment is against what we would stand for. As I said, the environment is for everyone equally, and in general, there's a sort of access to land issue in Northern Ireland that needs to be talked about and opened up a little bit. That would just be my thought on it.
Joanne, do you want
to? Yeah, I was equally unaware. So, I think we work quite closely with Forestry Service, on the siting of forests and forest planning. And it comes back to the land use strategy. Where do we need some of these things in Northern Ireland? And then how best should they be managed for the good of all? And timber, and forests at the minute is a public good.
Absolutely. And I think we should totally oppose it. When you look at in other countries, devastation of forests with wood trees being cut down for commercial use. I stay in Northern Ireland mainly. One of the main reasons is that I love the countryside here. And many people come here, tourists and other people just absolutely love our forests, our mountains, our lakes, and to privatize it is a nonsense.
So our next question is from Alderman Sarah Duncan, and it's about how can we persuade people not to pollute our rivers. Sarah, do you want to expand upon that a bit more?
I'm on the board of the Lagan Valley Regional Park, and I walk along the Lagan most days, and I would like the panel to tell me how the general public who use the towpath of the Lagan from Belfast up as far as Broadwater and so on could be persuaded not to litter the towpath, not to litter the Lagan, and especially not to leave little tied up black plastic bags full of dog shit all the way along the Lagan.
Who wants to tackle that one? Anna, do you want to do that one?
I think education is really important, and I'm so pleased now in Northern Ireland 100% of our schools are eco schools. I think through educating the young, I think it's very important, raising awareness about protecting our environment. If I have time, maybe I'll tell you a little story about my two sons. I'm very proud mum, and I always brag about my sons. But when my oldest son, he was only about a year and a half or so, still couldn't really talk. And a neighbour, two girls, came and said, "Oh, Mrs. Watson," I was called Mrs. Watson, "can I take your little boy out for a walk in his buggy?" So they took him out. It was a hot, hot day, and they bought an ice lolly for Connell, my son. And when he finished, he gave them the lolly stick, and the girls just threw the lolly stick onto the pavement, and he burst into tears. I couldn't say anything, but he burst into tears. And the girls took him back to the shop and bought him a second ice lolly. And when he finished, he handed it to them again, and they threw it again on the pavement, and he screamed. And then they took him back and said, "Mrs. Wilson, we don't have any more money to buy him any more ice lolly." And he kept on crying. I said, "Oh, what did you do when he gave... Did he give you the ice lolly stick?" "Yeah, what did you do?" "We just threw it away." And I said, "Well, he's not allowed to do it. He knows we take lolly sticks and the litter home." And that's why he cried. And the two of them were really quite shamefaced kind of being the grown-up.
Stephen?
I would just highlight the work of Keep Northern Ireland Beautiful at this point. They have a civic pride campaign going at the moment called Live Here, Love Here, which is tackling just that issue. And they're doing a great job. They have a scheme called Adopt a Spot, where they get communities to adopt places that are run down and degraded and look after them and get them into shape. And it's about understanding and raising awareness of the fact that the environment is for the public good again. And people who behave, as you've described, are treating it for their private good and neglecting that public good, which needs to be dealt with for sure.
Joanne?
Yes, I mean, I think one part of it comes back to this complete disconnection with the outside world. And, you know, I'm sure many of us know children who spend a vast majority of their time on electronic gizmos inside playing Xboxes, PlayStations. I've got a son myself, and, you know, he likes doing that as much as anybody else. I think part of our priorities are to reconnect young people, children in particular. They say that if you haven't connected a young child by the time they're four or five with the outside world and actually being in it and taking care of it and having that sense of ownership and responsibility, then you've nearly lost them forever. And I think that's quite frightening when you think about you know, how many of our young people spend most of their time indoors these days. So get all your young folks out, get them out there understanding and taking responsibility for the environment, and that the environment can't clean up all of the litter that they throw away. It just cannot accommodate all of it. You know, you've got to take it home. It's got to be disposed of responsibly.
We've got two more questions we're going to take, and then we're going to move towards the closure of the conference. So the next one is from John Arthur, and the topic he's written down here is shale gas. So as an impartial president, and it's a bit like the Falkland Islands or the Malvinas, I'm going to say it's shale gas or fracking. So do you want to ask your question?
Thank you, Andrew. I want to ask a question about shale gas, and I regret to produce what I think may be a note of disagreement with many people here. And I want to do this with respect. I joined the Alliance Party because I support the notion for a shared future for all of us. I agree entirely with Anna and what she's done. I think is marvellous. And what she said, I can find nothing to disagree with at all. However, I do disagree with the party's policy on, it says, invest in fracking rather than renewable energy. Or, sorry, the other way around. Freudian slip. to preface this, I need to say that over a decade ago, a number of companies in America made some very bad engineering and some bad science in a poorly regulated environment, which we don't have in Northern Ireland. And in 2012, the Royal Society and the Royal Academy of Engineering produced a report which said the health, safety, and environment risks associated with hydraulic fracturing as a means to extract shale gas can be managed effectively in the UK as long as operational best practice is implemented and forced through regulation. And there's a number of other organisations that have said the same thing. The Geological Society of London, which is the world's oldest geological society, has said pretty much the same thing. The United States National Academy of Science has said pretty much the same thing as well. So my question is, why does the Alliance Party or anybody else continue to oppose fracking, given that it is a suitable transition fuel to the 2020 objective? Thank you.
No problem. Anna, do you want to?
Yeah. Well, the party is not opposed to shale gas fracking, per se. We have asked for a moratorium. We said we want a very rigorous assessment, environmental impact assessment, before any fracking should proceed. But also, as a party, we are very supportive of renewable energy. We feel that it is better to concentrate more on exploring or exploiting renewable energy rather than to go back to fossil fuel exploitation.
Okay. Does any other members of the panel want to talk about the issue of shale gas?
If you can take it as my own opinion rather than Environment Links, we don't have a public stance on this at the moment that's been agreed by members. I would say my background is in earth system science and geology and geomorphology, and I would say that if we can guarantee that it is a transition fuel, then we could consider the possibility of it, but there must be a strong way mapped out toward renewables going into the future. You raised the question of regulation, and that's the question that I would raise over Northern Ireland as well, without an independent environmental protection agency. If we have best practice in regulation, and physically and scientifically, it might be all right, but there's a lot of other layers of complexity to do with fracking, socioeconomic things, and it's certainly not a straightforward issue.
Okay, thank you.
So, and Stephen has already alluded to some of what our concerns would be is, you know, this is a sort of a fairly recent technology in the UK, certainly. But it's about making sure that the evidence is available so that all the proper regulatory assessments can be done and letting that evidence sort of speak for itself as it goes forward.
Okay. Probably knows us with the agreement that the protocol is just one question. The last question is in relation to the Bombardier incinerator, and it's from Aris Nesbitt from East Belfast Alliance.
I'm very concerned about this planned incinerator. In 2012, Bombardier were given permission for this heat and power generating station. Now, it would burn household waste, including plastics and heavy metals, which can pollute the air, soil, and water. Poisonous dioxins are released, can get into the food chain, and ultrafine particles, nanoparticles, I believe, which when breathed in, get into the bloodstream, lungs, brain, they can cause cancer and heart attacks and lung disease. Now, apparently the air filters on this incinerator don't prevent the escape of these gases into the air. It will only be 1 kilometre away from houses in the Sydenham area and near to City Airport and Victoria Park. It's going to cost $85 million. And there would be 25-year contracts given out. It seems to me that would militate against people recycling more, because in order to feed this monstrous incinerator, you have to get enough waste. And so it might be that then contracts would be taken up for, say, the Isle of Man or England, and we would become a sort of dumping ground. Now, I believe that in Derry, plans for such an incinerator were withdrawn, because there was a public campaign, but it seems that very few people in Belfast really know about this. And I know that jobs are a question, but as RSPB representative said, wouldn't like to think that jobs are being traded for health and for the long-term good of the environment by building this incinerator, which it seems to me is very dangerous. I think there should be a delay until a rigorous health impact study is carried out. I'm interested to know what any of the panel think about that.
Okay, thank you. Panel?
I'll be the last one.
You're the last one, okay.
You go first.
Stephen.
All I would say is I think that you're right to raise concern over it. There are sometimes something that seems good can have unintended outcomes and perverse consequences, and those need to be explored, and to make sure that we aren't producing more waste just to feed an incinerator like that. All I could say is that it would need to be monitored very closely as to the emissions and the health of the local population.
And I think it plays to the point that Stephen made earlier about the strength of regulation around it. So both the waste production and the regulation of the operation of any incinerator that came along afterwards. So it comes back to the strength of regulation in Northern Ireland.
Although we have to bear in mind that we have to reduce landfill, we are putting too much waste onto landfill sites, and there are EU regulations that very soon will allow very small amount of landfills of waste going to landfill. So we certainly have to think of different means of using waste. But you know, we need to be thinking now. The new thinking is we don't call waste waste. We call it a resource. We can change waste into energy. So incinerator is one of those means that you can burn your waste and turn it into energy for better use. So I think we need to be thinking of new technologies. I understand that technology is actually very advanced, very good, and we are actually, there is another site in Mollusk, some of you may know the Newton Abbey councillors, there's another proposal in Mollusk, and that's very close, very, very close to local residents, whereas, you know, the one in Bombardier or in Sydenham is not as close as the one proposed by Act 21 in Mollusk. So and whether we need two in Northern Ireland. Should one be enough for the whole population? I think there's another question too we need to ask.
Thank you very much, Anna. It remains for me to close this and to thank Stephen and Joanne, especially for coming along and participating in this discussion. Thank you very much. And also thanks, obviously, to Anna for all the work she does as the Environment Chair of in the Assembly, and as MLA for South Belfast. Thank you very much, Anna. Thank you for your... So moving on towards the closure of this conference, I'm just going to invite up Neil Kelly, who's our party chair, to close conference. Before I do that, I just want to say thank you to all the staff and all the volunteers who made today possible. I know that this just didn't happen today, and I'm very much appreciative of all the work that went into that. But I'll pass over to Neil. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew, and thank you, everyone, for staying right to the end of the conference. It's been a fantastic event. It's been it's my sixth conference. The first one I attended as I was a new member. It was January 2010 in the Donadri Hotel near Antrim. And I must say, it's a totally different event then to what it is now. And I think it's down to maybe two things. I think later that year, we, as a party, got our first MP in the Omi Long, and I think that really did give the party a lift and a boost. And also, it is down, I think, to Sharon Laurie and the team, who have really taken this to a higher level now. Thank you, Neil. And I must say, I really do enjoy the conferences. I think perhaps it was because it was one of the first things I went to as a member, and I really do get enthused by them. And it's great to see so many people. Sometimes you don't see people one year to the next, but it's as if you've been seeing them all the time, friendly and great. And a good cross-section membership. Is interested to hear Jim Hendren talking about the history of the party from day one. And I was chatting earlier to Scott Moore, young fella, 16 years old. It's the second conference. And I follow Scott on social media, and a very enthusiastic young member. And it's great to see Alliance Youth here today. They had a stand outside. I was chatting to them earlier. And I think the party is in safe hands with Alliance Youth. As I say, it's been a great event. It's been a great event, and it was kicked off last night with the conference dinner and some good speeches. Baroness May Blood was fantastic, very straightforward and direct, and I must say I thoroughly enjoyed that. Today has been marvellous. We heard from our four of our new councillors earlier today. Although I'm not too sure about Patrick's election strategy. It did worry me a wee bit now as chairperson, you know. This going to England and doing nothing but getting elected. I mean, great. We also had a panel looking at what we heard about victims. We heard about the arts and culture. We had the local business on and certain integrated education and some very interesting content there. Unfortunately, we didn't get time for some of the questions after that, but great presentations. And then, of course, we had Stephen Farry, our minister, some great work going on there, and very difficult within the executive, of course, but Stephen continues to plough on with that, which is great. Davis Ford, party leader, fantastic speech. As I say, this is my sixth conference. I think that's about the strongest speech I've heard David make, and it really inspired me, and it's got me fired up. Coming in, as Naomi rightly said, and Naomi's speech obviously focusing in on East Belfast, with 53 days to this election, 53 days to retain this seat. And I would urge everyone, myself included, come May the 7th, 10 o'clock in the evening, I want to be able to say to myself that I could do no more to retain East Belfast. And I would ask that everyone, every member, every supporter of the Alliance Party, that's my challenge to you. At 10 o'clock on the Thursday, please be able to say to yourself, you could do no more. Because if we do that, I'm certain we will retain East Belfast. Listen, thank you very much for coming, and safe home. Thank you.